You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
With about 5 weeks before the trade deadline, teams are, I think, still trying to figure out what they have. Other teams are very happy with what they have, and other teams are making a surge in the standings to solidify themselves as contenders. I'm Allison Footer. Let's talk to the reporters who cover all of the West teams. And, Ken, the important thing, besides the fact that they've won four in a row, is that there are other pitchers besides Clayton Kershaw who are stepping up to help this team win, which sounds kind of ridiculous to say, but that has been sort of an issue over the course of the season. So it's nice to see some other things starting to come together. Even if it was 3 or 4 against the Brewers, I realize it's a struggling team, but still, I mean, they have to take what they can get at the softer corner of their schedule, right?
Well, sure. You know, you gotta beat up on the also-rans. You know, you gotta pile up wins. They still haven't proved that they can, really compete with the best teams. But I guess one step at a time.
Yeah. So they did take the first. I mean, as recording this, in the middle of a series of the Mets, they took the first game. I was just kind of looking through. I wanted to. I mean, we talk about a lot of the same things week to week, and it's a lot of what's not going right. But I do want to touch on some things that are going right. I know we talked a little bit about Corey Seager, but I want to go back to him. Just turned 22, and his numbers are really good. And projected over the season, which, of course, we have to take that with a grain of salt, he would have 26 home runs, 75 RBIs, and a .273 average. Really everything that they could have possibly wanted from this kid they're getting, and it seems like he's been adjusting to everything that's in the big leagues that he needs to very well.
Yeah, and they're asking a lot of him. You know, he's hitting second, third sometimes. He's right up there. They're not hiding him in the bottom of the order. Other teams know that the Dodgers are counting on him, and they have to pitch him tough. And he's hitting like a pro, you know, like a veteran. But that's not a surprise because he's hit, you know, everywhere he's been, every level, and he just has that stroke. You know, he's one of those rare, you know, left-handed power hitters with also contact. You know, he can change his stroke when the situation dictates, and you know, there's not much not to like. So, they could use about a dozen guys like that, and who couldn't?
And Kenley Jansen finally set that record, so that was nice. It was just one of those really good games where Clayton Kershaw starts it. It was a really, really hot, unusually hot night in L.A., which I'm laughing because it seemed like Clayton still did not change his attire for that and kept the sweatshirt and everything that he normally wears. But Jansen finally getting the saves record, that's a big deal. It seemed like there was a lot of excitement from him and from Eric Gagne, who was the previous record holder. So I guess just kind of, did he seem pretty excited about it?
Yeah, he was. And I think, you know, the Gagne angle just kind of makes it a bigger deal for the Dodgers and their fans and even for the players because, you know, what Gagne did here, even though, you know, it was really over a decade ago, nobody's forgotten it. And it was one of the more exciting times, in L.A. Dodger history, really, what he was able to accomplish. So when you're able to nudge him, aside and take over one of his records, it is a big deal. And it's also, you know, a big deal because Kenley Jansen he's never been an all-star, you know, and he just really hasn't gotten the recognition outside of L.A. that his stats really probably deserve. And, on top of that, this is his free agent year. You know, and the Dodgers don't seem to be too eager to re-sign him. They didn't talk to Zach Greinke during his free agent year, and we saw how that turned out. And so there are a lot of people that are sort of assuming that this is going to be his farewell season in LA. So when you roll all of those factors up, it made for a big night, you know, an exciting night, and maybe even bittersweet if this is, you know, what the Dodgers can look forward to not having in the future. So, he's been a big factor for them. 33 of those 162 saves were for Kershaw wins. So that was kind of fitting last night that he broke the record saving a Kershaw win.
Chris, I am talking about the fact that between now and the All-Star break, There are no teams that they will be playing that have a 500 or better record. And so far, they are 31-14 against teams below 500. So while they have to play all the games, and some, you know, there's a lot of below 500 teams that are pretty good, but they have to be looking at this part of the schedule and thinking, we could put ourselves in a fantastic position coming out of the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think they know, yes, Allison, I think they know that, you know, implicitly. They don't really come out and say, oh, we got to take care of this, but you know, they know what they have to do. And this, they really are a professional group. That's why they, you know, that's why they won the three World Series, and you know, it's also resulted from, it's, you know, it's a chicken or egg thing. You know, what does the professionalism come and make them winners, or do they become winners and that makes them more professional? I think it's a little bit of both. And you know, they know what they have to do, and you know, they and as you say, they've been beating the teams they have to beat. And that's, you know, there have been years where they haven't done so well against the bottom feeders. And so this is a big thing for them.
Yeah, this is just a good team. I don't care what anybody. It's funny because I was going through, like, okay, what are we going to talk about this week? And like I said, it's so much easier to talk about bad teams than good teams. Because good teams, they just win, and they get good pitching, and they get good offense, and they get good relief pitching. And I was like, well, I might have to start talking about Cha-Cha Bowls and Clam Chowder again. But,
there you go.
Yeah, they're playing right now as we're recording this, but before that, they've won 10 of 11. They're 19 games over 500, and they're 5.5 games ahead. There has been one issue. Matt Duffy went on the DL with an Achilles issue, so that's kind of a problem. So why don't we talk a little bit about who his replacement is, who could be getting the majority of the playing time over there?
Well, it's a semi-platoon with left-hand batting Connor Golaski facing right-hand pitchers, and right-hand batting Ramiro Pena facing lefties. That's probably the way it'll go. Most of the time, I think Bruce Bochy will use a platoon, you know, with those two. You know, Knapp was starting to hit well when he got hurt, and that was a shame because he's been inconsistent or erratic by his own admission through most of the year. But if he's able to come back in just the two-week period, I think that'll be good. You know, obviously it'll be good for the Giants. It'll benefit them not just having Matt Duffy back, but also having given Pena and Golaski, you know, some more at-bats, and just you know, getting them. It's always good for the reserves to get as much playing time as possible.
One thing that we haven't talked a lot about is the bullpen. I remember in spring training, we have talked about this, but let's talk about it again. But we were talking to Dwayne Kuiper. We did a little interview with him, and he was saying that the one thing that the Giants will not let happen is the bullpen to be the downfall of this team, and whatever they need, they're going to have to find a way to go out and get it. The relievers have really had a nice June. One of the lower ERAs in the majors, after really having a pretty high ERA, they were like 14th of 15 in the National League, and they've really kind of gotten that together. So that's been a good contributor to this run, huh?
Oh, definitely. And you know, Allison, last night, or I should say Wednesday night in Pittsburgh was a great example. Jeff Samardzija got knocked out after three innings. It was equal to the shortest start of his career, and the bullpen contributed six shutout innings. They allowed four, four hits. Pittsburgh native Derek Law performed before his, you know, fans and friends and relatives, started all off with two scoreless innings. It was a great game for the bullpen. And it came at the right time. Excuse me. And so, they may be rounding in the shape.
AJ, I was very happy to see that Matt Kemp is starting to come around a little bit. You had a nice article about just like how he has been more selective in June with the pitches that he's swinging at, and it's really paying off. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it goes beyond the walks. That's kind of been like the thing everyone's talking about here in San Diego, because he only walked four times in the first 2 months, and I think he has six already in June. It goes way beyond that. It's more the fact that he's not swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. And in the first couple months of the season, he was swinging at, I think, 44% of pitches out of the strike zone, which is absurdly high, especially for a hitter of his caliber. And so pitchers notice that, and they pitch him outside the zone, and he gets nothing to hit. And that's kind of why his average was down around 220. Well, in the last couple weeks, he's laid off those pitches pretty much. He's laid off almost all of them. He's bringing that swing and miss rate down. And as a result, pitchers have to pitch to him in the strike zone. So his uptick, I think he's hitting around 370 in June alone. That's the result of his being selective at the plate, because pitchers know they can't get him out with pitches outside the strike zone. They're taking notice of the way he's swinging the bat. And when you have to pitch to Matt Kemp, when you have to throw fastballs to Matt Kemp in the strike zone, he's going to hit him.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that being in a lineup kind of void of scary hitters, that could really get a guy out of his game if he's not careful. I mean, I've covered teams where they'd have, like, I just remember, like, kind of Hunter Pence's last year or two in Houston, and I was fascinated, like, really impressed by how well he was still hitting with, like, basically hitting in a vacuum. And that's when things can get a little, like, they try to overcompensate a little bit, to, like, do too much, because there's really nobody else who's going to be able to do anything. I mean, that's all kind of mean, but that's sort of how it is, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of a chicken or the egg type thing, because the Padres' offense as a whole has been fantastic this month, and Matt Kemp's been great, and the guys behind him are also hitting well. So Matt Kemp and Will Myers are obviously the driving force behind that, because they're the Padres' two best hitters. But it's also not a coincidence that Derek Norris is hitting the ball well. Yanhervis Solarte came back. Melvin Upton Jr. is hitting the ball well. It's not a coincidence that the guys behind Matt Kemp are putting up better offensive numbers, thus giving him a little protection in the order, kind of maybe taking some of the burden off of him. It's not a – even though Will Myers and Matt Kemp are the guys that the Padres rely upon, it's not – those two are bust right now. And that, as a result of that, Will Myers and Matt Kemp have really flourished.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I was reading with some angst the way that Fernando Rodney's pursuit of a record for the most innings without an earned run allowed to start the season came to a just sad little ending. So let's just set us up for tell us what happened there when he was trying to get this record.
Yeah, so he's at he was at 25 and a third innings entering this game. I believe it was Tuesday night in Baltimore. And he said 25 and a third innings. They bring him on with two outs in the eighth inning, and he gets the final out there. So he has 25 and two-thirds. Randy Jones' record is 26 innings. And obviously, if you want to, in terms of record chasing for scoreless innings, you need to complete innings. So if he goes two-thirds of an inning in the next inning, it doesn't count, because he needs to complete the whole inning or be removed and have someone else finish the inning scoreless. Anyway, he puts men on second and third with two outs, and gets an easy chopper to first base, and the ball hits off the back of the base and goes between Will Myers' legs. And that's the only earned, and that allows a run to score, and that's the only earned run that has been scored off Fernando Rodney this season. And after the game, it was funny, pretty much to a man, Fernando Rodney was the least upset Padre. I think Will Myers said, "Hey, I'll take an error. Give me an error," even though you can't give a guy an error if the ball hits off the base and he's supposed to adjust like that. Andy Green said it was unfortunate, and they'd look into appealing, which it has since been appealed, but from what I saw, it's not going to win. Anyway, it was just kind of a fluke play, but it speaks volumes of Fernando Rodney. That's the only earned run he's given up this year.
Steve, so they've won, as of this recording, they've won 9 of 13. They played the Marlins, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Blue Jays for one, and they're currently in a series with the Rockies. So I guess, some of these teams are beatable, and that's kind of what you have to do to get back on track, but they've got to be feeling pretty good about how things have been going lately, right?
Yeah, Allison, I think when you look at the reason they're winning games, I think that's what gives them the optimism in terms of their starting pitching has really picked up the pace. And Zach Greinke, until last night, had won seven straight starts. He was in line to win his eighth yesterday, but the bullpen coughed it up there in the eighth inning, but they came back and won. So, I mean, he's been pitching well. Shelby Miller, in his first start coming off the DL, he pitched well. So I think that they're starting to feel like these pitchers, the starters, are going deeper into games, which is helping the bullpen. It's not so overtaxed. I think they like what they see out of guys like, obviously Paul Goldschmidt now, heading into last night's game, was up to 290 after hitting, 222 as of May 15th. And Jake Lamb's been swinging the bat well. So they've, Gene Segura as well. So they've they've got a lot of positive signs. So more so than, you know, who they're beating or how many games they're winning, it just seems like some of what they had expected to happen when the season started is coming through right now, at least.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the starting pitching numbers like you were talking about. So Patrick Corbin, I was kind of intrigued by him. So since he allowed 7 runs to Houston on May 31st, he's had like 4 good starts. He's got a 3.81 ERA in June. He allowed 2 runs and then 4 and then 3 and then 2. But he, like you said, he's pitching deep into games. That's, I mean, with him especially, I looked at him as like the swing man on this staff. I had high expectations for Miller and Greinke, and I thought, well, Corbin can put together a good season, and they probably have something going here. So I guess that's encouraging, considering all the rehab that he's had to do in his career, just to see him sort of settling in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked so much earlier this year about how they were making constant roster moves with regards to the bullpen because relievers were tired and they needed to find innings someplace. And now all of a sudden you look, and it's been a while since Cole Mentor's had to throw many innings out of the bullpen, or Randall Delgado has had to throw many innings out of the bullpen. So when the starters go deeper like that, and like you mentioned with Corbin, it really helps set up the rest of the bullpen. And they've gotten some good outings out of Robbie Ray. I know it frustrates people that he only seems to go 5 innings because his pitch efficiency isn't always great. But still, for your 5th starter, if you're getting 5 quality innings out of him every 5th day, that's okay. You can live with that. And Archie Bradley's come up and pitched pretty well this time around. So I think that there's some signs on the pitching side, really, that things are looking up for them.
Thomas, I don't want to say they're like the surging Rockies, but they, as we have said, they're a lot better than maybe we gave them credit for going into the season. They're about as good as I think the Rockies thought that they were going to be. They've won 10 of their last 16, and I feel like all I do is ask you about pitching, young pitching, and all of that, because that's obviously always an issue with this club. But the offense, there's several hitters that are really doing their part in making sure that this thing continues on. So there's like Arenado, Carlos Gonzalez, LeMahieu, Blackman. I mean, those guys are all having pretty good years, right?
Yeah, they are. They're having pretty good years. You have this team has had consistency issues, not necessarily with batting average and those numbers, but with driving in runs when they've had a chance. But lately, during this stretch that you're talking about, they've really done much better with that. They struggled the first 3 games in Miami, but they won the last one, won the first one in New York. And offensively, they certainly did their part in the second game in New York, but the bullpen let them down. But, yeah, this team's starting to click offensively, and they've got a big homestand coming. So if the team's going to make a move, this is a good time to do it. As I've said, I don't think they're quite ready for prime time yet, but let's see if they hang around. I mean, I don't mind being surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, Arenado. I mean, we have to just, like, spotlight him. That this is any big surprise, but he's having another all-star caliber season, and he really, man, if you take him out of the equation, this totally changes. But for a guy like him to be able to continue doing what he's doing with these are tough games, and they've had some tough stretches, and he's just a constant. It's got to be nice to watch him on an everyday basis.
I'll tell you what's nice is seeing him. He's in his, third big year with this team, or fourth. Now I can't remember. It seems like he's been there forever. But
right.
the truth of the matter is he keeps getting better. I mean, the criticism with him, there's always a yeah, but with a baseball player, is he doesn't walk enough. Now, I would rather hit a home run than have the bat on the shoulder waiting to walk. I've talked to you about that several times. But he's also drawing the walks, and he's picked up his on-base percentage. He's not chasing those third strike pitches out of the zone. And that's making him even more of a threat. I think that that a lot of teams would go outside of the zone on him and hope he wouldn't hit the ball hard, and he does have the ability to do that. But now there are times when he'll take that walk and keep an inning going, and as long as the team behind him is hitting, that's fine. Now, if the guys behind him are struggling, then what happens is he'll walk, and people will be more than happy to see him stand there at first base while other hitters ground out a strikeout. But Arenado, individually, each year he's picked up something, whether it's another step defensively or whether it's power. At first he didn't hit for power, now he's hitting for power. Now and then he's hit better for average, and now the on-base percentage has picked up. It seems like the more he plays, the better player he becomes.
Let's talk about, we have to touch on the pitching, of course. John Gray has some arm fatigue, and he says it's sort of been there kind of lingering a little bit for a while. So do you think this is something to be alarmed from? Is this more than just like the quote-unquote dead arm that we hear every once in a while? Or do you think that there's something more going on there?
That I don't know. I would guess that it's a little bit of the dead arm period because about halfway through spring training, he suffered a midsection injury and missed quite a bit of time. He actually didn't start the season healthy. So this may be the time that the dead arm sets in. Now, could it be more? It is possible. This is a guy who last year, I think he ended up at 155 innings, and they brought him up and curtailed his innings after bringing him up to the majors last year. And he is a guy who also broke into pro ball in 2013 with that half season. So he hasn't spent a whole lot of time on the five-day-a-week schedule, which is what you want. And if you look at so many pitchers that come up so quickly out of college, they always have a setback period. If this is just the dead arm period and they're able to take care of it without it becoming something more serious, then good for the Rockies, because this is a guy that they're going to need. I would rather him miss a few starts here and there than miss a whole bunch of time. And you were talking about surgery, whether it's Tommy John or some other famous pitcher. You don't want surgery involved with John Gray.